Today is Monday, the 27th of October, 2025, and this is the World Socialist website. Fascist conspirator Steve Bannon tells The Economist, "We have a plan for a third Trump term," by Barry Gray. Neo-Nazi Trump ally Steve Bannon told The Economist magazine in an interview Thursday that President Trump will have at least one more term in office and that the leaders of his MAGA movement have a plan to defy the 22nd Amendment to the US Constitution, which says presidents can be elected to only two terms. In the 40-minute interview posted on The Economist's website, both Bannon and his interlocutors, Editor-in-Chief Zanny Minton-Badoz and Deputy Editor Edward Carr, ignored the massive No Kings protests that brought over 7 million people onto the streets across the US on October 18. Bannon claimed it was the will of the American people for the widely hated would-be dictator to remain for a third term in 2028 and possibly beyond. Bannon's statements amount to an admission that he and his co-conspirators in and around the Trump White House are engaged in treason. They are plotting to overthrow the Constitution and impose a presidential dictatorship. Yet his interview has elicited no serious response from the Democratic Party or the establishment media, including the unofficial organ of the Democrats, the New York Times. Below is part of the interview as broadcast online. Bannon: "Well, he's going to get a third term. So, Trump, 28. Trump is going to be president in 28, and people just ought to get accommodated with that." Zanny Minton-Badoz: "So what about the 22nd Amendment? Bannon: "There's many different alternatives. At the appropriate time, we'll lay out what the plan is. But there's a plan. And President Trump will be the president in 28. We had longer odds in 16 and longer odds in 24 than we got in 28. And President Trump will be the president of the United States, and the country needs him to be the president of the United States. We have to finish what we started, and the way we finish it, do Trump. Trump is a vehicle. I know this will drive you guys crazy, but he's a vehicle of divine providence. We need him for at least one more term, and he'll get that in 28. Bannon made clear that he was talking about civil war. He said, quote, "It's no longer about debate. You're not going to reason with these people. We're in a political war. The end point is we are in charge," end quote. Taking a page from the playbook of Adolf Hitler, Bannon said the strategy was to, quote, "seize the institutions and then purge them," end quote. After the failure of his 1923 Munich Beer Hall Putsch, Hitler determined that he would come to power through the institutions of the Weimar Republic with the support of decisive sections of the German capitalist class. That is what occurred in 1933, when the crisis-ridden German ruling class concluded that it could no longer rule by democratic means and turned to the Nazis to smash the working class. Trump is implementing the goals of his failed January 6, 2021 putsch, enabled by the cowardice and complicity of the Democrats. Joe Biden, after January 6, called for a strong Republican Party and did nothing serious to prosecute Trump and his co-conspirators. In the run-up to the 2024 election, Biden, Kamala Harris, and other leading Democrats warned that Trump was a fascist and would impose a dictatorship. But now that Trump is doing just that, all such talk from the Democrats has been dropped. In the interview, Bannon made the absurd claim that Trump rules in the interests of workers and the little man by ending corporatism and restoring capitalism. This was said of a multi-billionaire gangster who is the open representative of the financial oligarchy in the United States. The interview was posted one day after Trump pardoned billionaire Changpeng Zhao, the former CEO of crypto exchange Binance. Zhao, who has extensive business relations with Trump's sons, pleaded guilty to money laundering during the Biden administration. The interview also coincided with Trump's demolition of the East Wing of the White House, the physical expression of his dismantling of the legacy of America's democratic revolutions to build a massive ballroom. This Mar-a-Lago-style monstrosity is being paid for by corporate donors, including Meta, Amazon, Apple, Caterpillar, Comcast, Google, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Palantir, Union Pacific, and the Lutnick family, Stephen Schwarzman, Blackstone, and the Winklevoss brothers. The very fact that The Economist, a bastion of the media establishment in Britain, gave Bannon a platform to spew his fascist filth is highly significant. The promotion of Bannon was underscored by the fact that the magazine's editor-in-chief and deputy editor were chosen to conduct the interview. Throughout the interview, they showed enormous deference to the neo-Nazi demagogue. The publication devotes its current issue to a special report headlined, quote, "The Coming Debt Emergency and Governments Going Broke," end quote. The extensive article argues that governments around the world must carry out massive attacks on entitlement, social programs, and complains that retirees are living too long. At one point in the interview, Bannon, declaring, quote, "We are in a war to restore capitalism," end quote, held up The Economist and said, quote, "In this magazine, you tell me we're headed to financial Armageddon," end quote. Such is the real agenda of war on the working class behind the policies of the ruling class internationally and Bannon's rhetoric. These policies are incompatible with democratic forms of rule. They can be implemented only by means of dictatorship. In his interview, Bannon spoke of his populist nationalist, i.e. fascist, movement as part of an international wave, citing Nigel Farage's Reform Party in the UK, Le Pen's RN in France, the Alternative for Germany, Vox in Spain, and Meloni's Brothers of Italy. Bannon, who fancies himself a great strategist of fascist counter-revolution, bases his plan on one critical assumption, which is that the Democratic Party will do nothing beyond filing impotent legal appeals to the Supreme Court and muttering verbal disapproval to uphold the Constitution. When push comes to shove, the Democrats will shamelessly bend down before Trump. And this assumption is entirely correct. On Friday, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries whimpered that Bannon's remarks were, quote, "dangerous authoritarian talk" and represented a continuation of Trump's pattern of, quote, "defying the rule of law" and, quote, "testing the limits of our Constitution." Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called Bannon's statements chilling and proof that the MAGA movement is eroding constitutional safeguards. Neither so much as called for Bannon's prosecution and arrest or demanded that he reveal the identities of his co-conspirators. As always, they've made no call for mass action to halt the drive to dictatorship. By Sunday, The Economist interview had disappeared from the establishment media. Appearing on the Sunday talk show, Face the Nation, Jeffries made no mention of Bannon's statements or any of Trump's dictatorial actions, nor did host Margaret Brennan ask about them. No faction of the Democrats, including its so-called progressive wing, will lift a finger to stop Trump's drive for dictatorship. Last week, Bernie Sanders, whose cynical opportunism knows no bounds, appeared on the podcast of Trump supporter Tim Dillon and backed Trump's war on immigrants, saying, quote, "Trump did a better job," unquote, than Biden in securing the border. The Democrats' indifference to democratic rights was already demonstrated in 2000 when Al Gore accepted the theft of the election by the Republican majority on the Supreme Court, which halted the counting of votes in Florida to award the White House to George W. Bush, the loser of the popular vote. As the World Socialist website wrote at the time, this showed that there was no serious constituency for the defence of democratic rights within the US ruling class. Bannon's declaration that Trump will be kept in power through unconstitutional, i.e. illegal methods, signifies a break with democracy and its traditional political processes. But from this fact flows a critical political conclusion. If Trump is determined to retain power in violation of the law, this means that his removal from office becomes possible only through mass action, outside the bounds of the electoral process. Perhaps Mr. Bannon has not thought through to the end the implications of his criminal strategy, but there is no escaping the fact that he is legitimizing the resort to revolution by the working class. The conspiracy of Bannon and his accomplices in the White House has created the political premises for precisely the situation envisioned in 1776 by Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. Quote, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. In contemporary terms, the struggle against dictatorship depends upon the mobilization of the working class as an independent social force. It must take the power out of the hands of the capitalist class, whose interests are incompatible with democracy. The safety and happiness of the working class, which comprises the overwhelming majority of the population, requires the formation of a workers' government based on socialist principles. The precondition for this struggle is a complete break with the Democratic Party. Any subordination of the struggle to defend democratic and social rights to the Democratic Party, itself a party of the corporate oligarchy, is fatal. The Democrats are petrified that any movement of the working class will escape their control and challenge the foundations of the capitalist system. They fear that far more than the prospect of fascist rule. In its statement to the October 18 protests, the Socialist Equality Party noted the deep hostility in the population to Trump's attempt to establish a fascistic dictatorship. However, it explained, anger and outrage are not enough to stop dictatorship. What is required and what is most critical is a clear program and strategy to direct this struggle. Since October 18, Trump has stepped up his war against immigrants and their defenders, unleashing the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, Gestapo, to attack protesters in Chicago, New York, and other cities, and threatening to invoke the Insurrection Act, which will give him the power to deploy active duty troops across the country. He has continued illegally bombing boats off the coast of Latin America and dispatched a carrier task force to prepare an attack on Venezuela. The SCP's calls for workers to organize collectively by forming rank-and-file committees in every workplace, factory, and neighborhood to coordinate its struggle and link up with the struggles of workers internationally. This fight is being spearheaded by the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, IWA-RFC. These committees must link the defense of democratic rights with the fight against war and for jobs, wages, healthcare, and social equality. The fight against fascism cannot be separated from the struggle against capitalism and for socialism. The defence of democracy requires the expropriation of the financial oligarchy and the transformation of the corporations and banks into public utilities under democratic workers' control. The immense wealth concentrated in the hands of a few must be used to meet human needs, not private profit. We urge all those who want to fight for this program to join the Socialist Equality Party. Pentagon Moving Massive Naval Force Towards Venezuela by Patrick Martin. The Trump administration is mobilizing the largest naval force in the Caribbean Sea since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, in open preparation for a massive and illegal war against Venezuela. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth announced Friday that at Trump's order, he was redeploying the aircraft carrier Gerald R. Ford, the largest such vessel in the world, from the Mediterranean Sea to the Caribbean. This follows Thursday's operation when two US B-1 bombers flew along the coast of Venezuela in a brazen show of force. This in turn followed a series of attacks on small boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific Ocean, in which US military forces have destroyed 10 small fishing boats, killing at least 43 people. Bodies with missing limbs and horrific burns have begun to wash up on the shores of Trinidad and Tobago, the island nation, which is only 6 miles off the coast of Venezuela, at its closest point. It will take about a week for the aircraft carrier and its associated ships, called a carrier group, to transit the Mediterranean and the Atlantic Ocean and take up a station off the coast of Venezuela. But airstrikes and other attacks on targets within Venezuela could begin at any time, as Trump gloated that nearly all boat traffic in the region has stopped and that the US would shift its focus to attacks on land. By the beginning of November, then, the US flotilla off of Venezuela will include an aircraft carrier with 70 fighter jets and attack helicopters, a helicopter carrier with another 30 tilt-rotor aircraft and attack helicopters, and nearly 2,000 Marines, the spearhead of an assault landing force, a guided missile cruiser, 6 or more destroyers, and other support ships. Needless to say, this is not a force aimed at interdicting drug smugglers. Its sole purpose is to invade Venezuela, a country of more than 30 million people, twice the size geographically of Iraq, and 1.5 times the size geographically of Afghanistan. Roughly half the country, the southern half, is tropical jungle, part of the Amazon basin, mainly bordering on Brazil. A report in the right-wing British newspaper Daily Telegraph linked the threats against the government of President Nicolas Maduro to Trump's campaign against immigrants within the United States. Quote, "Some sources close to the Trump administration point out that assembling an invasion fleet may be helpful for Mr. Trump to solve a separate policy headache, immigration. Declaring war could help with the revival of the Alien Enemies Act, last used to intern Japanese, German and Italian nationals during World War II, to detain and deport Venezuelan nationals en masse. Under the 17th century law, actually the 18th century, a president can target citizens of a hostile nation in times of declared war or if an enemy government mounts an invasion or predatory incursion. Early in his second term, the president dusted off the wartime law, but was later blocked by the Court of Appeal. Two architects of the Venezuela campaign are Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and, interestingly, Stephen Miller, the man known as Trump's brain on all things immigration. Venezuela and the drug boats thus become a complex fusion of Trump's great fixations: national security, immigration, and the need to revive American dominance," end quote. In the event of a full-scale war against Venezuela, the legal position of Venezuelan migrants inside the United States would change abruptly. Trump has already invoked the Alien Enemies Act, although this has been limited in certain ways by the courts. It is quite likely that Venezuelan nationality would result in immediate arrest and detention, regardless of any other legal considerations, such as temporary protected status. Given the number of Venezuelan migrants, likely several million now in the US, a huge number of immigration agents, police and troops would be required to detain them, and only massive concentration camps could house them. A report in The Atlantic magazine at the weekend described a tense meeting between Admiral Alvin Halsey, then the chief of the Pentagon's Southern Command, heading operations in the Caribbean and throughout Latin America, and Secretary of War Hegseth, over the strikes against small boats. Soon afterwards, Halsey announced his retirement, only 1 year into his 3-year term in that top position. The magazine reported, quote, "Once the Ford arrives, the US will have roughly as many ships in the Caribbean as it used to defend Israel from Iranian missile strikes this summer." As US military assets in the region have accumulated, the administration's language about deposing Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has grown more threatening. A person close to the White House told Semaphore this week that the administration would cooperate with Congress on its plans for military action only when, quote, "Maduro's corpse is in US custody," end quote. According to a report Saturday in the Washington Post, quote, "The Pentagon in recent weeks has also deployed the MV Ocean Trader, a civilian ship converted into a floating special operations base that can dispatch troops on short notice. The ship's presence in the Caribbean coincided with the deployment of select aircraft from the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, an elite helicopter unit that supports the most dangerous missions in the world," end quote. These forces could be used for raids against land targets in Venezuela, as Trump has threatened, or even a decapitation strike against the Venezuelan leadership in Caracas. A U.S. destroyer, the USS Gravely, and the Marine unit are to visit Trinidad this week, putting them only 6 miles from the Venezuelan coast. The Wall Street Journal quoted Robert O'Brien, Trump's national security advisor in the final 2 years of his first term, quote, "Moving a carrier into theater is the clearest statement the United States can make that this crisis is serious. The combat power that the Ford Task Force can generate is sufficient to defeat the Nicolas Maduro regime's military, which would be the key step to installing the country's legitimately elected president, Maria Machado, in office," end quote. The last description is remarkable, since Machado was disqualified from running in 2024 and therefore never received a single vote. She has never appeared on the ballot in any presidential election, but her Nobel Peace Prize made her the likely frontwoman for a new US-backed regime in Venezuela. The Democratic Party has been largely silent on the Trump administration's build-up toward an illegal war against Venezuela. Much of the legal rationale, being prepared by the White House, is based on the signature strikes authorized by the Obama administration, which justified missile strikes on people whose activities supposedly fit the signature of Al-Qaeda terrorists, even if their actual identities were unknown. In similar fashion, Caribbean fishermen are being portrayed as fitting the signature of drug smugglers. Earlier this month, Democratic Senators Adam Schiff and Tim Kaine sponsored a resolution to stop the strikes. The vote failed 48-51, with Rand Paul and Linda Murkowski being the only Republicans to support it. The only Democrat to vote against it was John Fetterman. In a remarkable interview on Meet the Press Sunday, Democratic Senator Reuben Gallagher of Arizona was asked if the Trump administration attacks on alleged drug boats are consistent with international law. He replied, quote, "No, it's murder. If this president feels that they're doing something illegally, then he should be using the Coast Guard. If there's an act of war, then you use our military, and then you come and talk to us first. But this is murder," end quote. His Meet the Press interviewer, Kristen Welker, did not raise an eyebrow over his characterization, but simply passed on without comment. Gallagher then went on to discuss the Democratic Party's posture in the government shutdown, demanding that Trump agree to negotiate. Neither Gallagher nor Welker indicated that there was any contradiction between calling Trump a murderer and seeking to sit down with him at a conference table. Meanwhile, Gallagher's fellow Democrat from Arizona, Senator Mark Kelly, speaking on ABC News This Week program, would only characterize the boat strikes as questionable and suggest that Trump should have consulted with Congress before taking such actions. The disparity only underscores the essential solidarity of the Democrats and Republicans as parties of American imperialism. Democrat presidents like Obama and Biden, like Trump today, routinely engaged in drone missile murder and other acts of imperialist butchery, like the US-NATO bombing of Libya and the US-NATO war against Russia in Ukraine. Trump, prepared to starve tens of millions of Americans by allowing food stamp funding to run out Saturday. By Tom Hall, Nick Barrickman, and Pete Salmon. The month-long government shutdown is rapidly turning into a social catastrophe as funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, commonly known as food stamps, is set to expire on November 1. The program provides essential food aid to around 42 million Americans living near or below the official poverty line. Its cutoff would mark, in the words of the CEO of Hunger Free America, quoted in The Guardian, quote, "the greatest hunger catastrophe in America since the Great Depression, and I don't say that as hyperbole," end quote. The immediate impact of the cutoff will vary by state, since SNAP is jointly administered by federal and state agencies. Pennsylvania and Texas have already sent out messages warning recipients that their benefits may be shut off, while the government of Louisiana, one of the poorest states in the country, has announced it is searching for alternative sources of funding to mitigate the impact. SNAP currently has roughly $6 billion in contingency funds, enough to finance a program for most of November. At the beginning of the shutdown, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, stated that it was legally required to use those funds to continue operating SNAP during the government shutdown. However, that document has now been deleted from the agency's website, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. The agency now claims it is legally prohibited from using the contingency funding on the specious grounds that such funds are intended only for natural disasters or similar emergencies. The administration argues that the government shutdown, which it blames on the Democrats, does not qualify. The large notice on the USDA website now declares, quote, "Bottom line, the well has run dry. We are approaching an inflection point for Senate Democrats. They can continue to hold out for health care for illegal aliens and gender mutilation procedures, or reopen the government so mothers, babies and the most vulnerable among us can receive critical nutrition assistance." End quote. The claim that Democrats are demanding funding for health care for undocumented immigrants and for gender-affirming care is false, and it is illegal under the Hatch Act to post such transparently partisan messages on an official government website. This language is part of the White House's fascist rhetoric as part of its plans for dictatorship. In reality, the hunger crisis is being deliberately manufactured by the Trump administration. It is going to allow tens of millions to go hungry as a form of political blackmail over the shutdown, through which Trump is seeking to seize control of the federal budget process from Congress and consolidate executive power. This is part of a broader policy of class war. Trump has already enacted more than $180 billion in cuts to SNAP over the next decade under his Big Beautiful Bill passed this summer. Even without the shutdown, new eligibility restrictions set to take effect next month would have reduced or eliminated payments for roughly half of all recipients. At the same time, Trump is threatening to dismantle unnamed Democrat and semi-communist programs. This clearly refers to food stamps, Medicaid, and other social programs enacted decades ago under Democratic administrations, when that party was still associated with limited social reforms. Medicaid alone was also slashed by more than $800 billion over the summer. The administration is also preparing for mass repression, It has reallocated $8 billion, roughly the same amount required to fund SNAP for an entire month, to pay soldiers during the shutdown. This is designed to ensure their loyalty as the government illegally deploys troops into American cities and moves towards invoking the Insurrection Act. The cost of maintaining food stamp funding is also less than half the $17.5 billion construction and research and development costs of the USS Gerald Ford aircraft carrier, which has been dispatched to the Caribbean as part of the US military build-up against Venezuela. The boundaries separating government from the financial oligarchy are being openly dismantled. Soldiers' pay is also being supplemented by a $130 million anonymous donation, later revealed to be from Timothy Mellon, a reclusive billionaire and one of the heirs to the Mellon family fortune, originally built by the 19th and early 20th century banker, industrialist, and Treasury Secretary Andrew Mellon. As the SNAP funding expiration approaches, scenes of growing desperation are already visible. A series of food pantry events in Washington, D.C. area last week drew large crowds of furloughed or fired federal workers. Quote, "We're already seeing incredible food insecurity numbers," end quote, Abby Fenton, Chief Advancement Officer of the Capital Area Food Bank, told the World Socialist website at one such event last Friday. Quote, "Over 36% of the folks in our area, which is about 1.5 million households, are experiencing some level of food insecurity already. So with the government shutdown, we felt that because people were missing paychecks, we needed to expand operations." One terminated federal employee told the WSWS, quote, "While I was on maternity leave, I was fired for no cause. No leave, no severance, just last paycheck and you're out the door," end quote. She continued, "We're worried about losing our home. We are constantly applying for jobs, but we are part of the first round of the firings. As more people continue to get laid off, furloughed and fired, that means the competition for the employment dramatically increases," end quote. Speaking about the impact of the government's elimination of humanitarian programs administered by the now abolished U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, she added, "That's blood on this president's hands. It makes us less safe because of the spread of disease, and so it's just continuing to get worse." This is a playbook that's been used in other dictatorships and authoritarian regimes. It's exactly, they're doing it perfect, play by play. And what's unfortunate is that there's not enough being done to stop him, she said, referring to the inaction of the Democratic Party, even as millions took to the streets in the October 18 demonstrations. Democratic representatives Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut and Angie Craig of Minnesota issued a joint statement last week calling the impending food stamp cutoff, quote, "perhaps the most cruel and unlawful offence the Trump administration has perpetrated yet," end quote. But the Democratic Party's real response has been to redouble its appeals for Trump to see reason and agree to a deal. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries told CBS News on Sunday, quote, "there's an urgent need to reopen the government, which is why we continue to demand the Republicans sit at the negotiating table so we can enact a spending agreement that's bipartisan in nature," end quote. The call for a bipartisan agreement is code for a deal that includes sweeping social spending cuts, possibly offset by a token or cosmetic concession on Medicaid to provide Democrats with political cover. This is the same political theatre that has characterised every budget crisis for decades. But Trump is not playing by the ordinary rules, as the Democrats are well aware. In a recent interview, Trump loyalist Steve Bannon openly admitted the existence of a secret plan to allow Trump to remain in office beyond constitutional term limits, effectively establishing a dictatorship. Yet the Democrats refuse to oppose him because they fear the mass working-class movement required to defeat Trump far more than they fear the prospect of dictatorship itself. The situation underscores the necessity for such a movement, an independent mobilisation of the working class, opposed to both capitalist parties and to the capitalist system as a whole. This is what the Socialist Equality Party fights for.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.